Evidence and Answers begins right now.
This is Evidence and Answers radio broadcast with our host, Pat Zukeran. Pat is an author, teacher, and international speaker in the area of Christian apologetics, the defense of the Christian faith. Who was the Pharaoh of the Exodus? Many scholars point to Ramses II, but the dates of his reign and the archaeological record don't match the biblical account. Could there be another ruler who fits both scripture and history? Archaeologist Dr. Stephen Collins reveals the Pharaoh of the Exodus and presents the strong historical evidence that points to the true ruler of Egypt at the time of the Exodus. If you've missed any part of this broadcast, log on at evidenceandanswers.org, and there you will find this message entitled The Pharaoh of the Exodus, listed under the 2025 Evidence and Answers Conference Series, entitled Can We Believe the Bible? And you'll also find hundreds more podcasts that you may download or listen online. Now let's get right into part two of this three-part study.
Number two, Mitanni. Number three, the Hittites. And number four, Assyria. That's the power rankings in that order. Now we're going to have the first pharaoh. Who we got? Amenhotep I. How did we get him? Okay, Akhmose. Why is he important? Because he is the pharaoh who kicked the Hyksos out of Egypt. He finally, by the way, the archaeology here is so much fun. The previous king, the last king of the 17th dynasty, had tried to kick the Hyksos out of Egypt, and his mummy has a big sickle sword gash in his skull. Okay? Didn't work. They got him. It didn't work. But Akhmose was the first Egyptian pharaoh, and he starts a new dynasty. He kicks the Hyksos out of Egypt. He reunites Upper and Lower Egypt and starts to build the great Egyptian kingdom again. And so in this time, we still have Mitanni as number two, and then we have something else, the next pharaoh. And we're going to go through these pretty quickly. Don't worry about what's on the screen. Don't try to read all of that. I'll just kind of tell you what's happening. This is an old army buddy. This is not son. This is not son of Akhmose. This is army buddy. So Akhmose is putting the kingdom together. And so Amenhotep is doing the same thing. He's trying to put stuff back together. He's got to get what the Hyksos had controlled back under the economy of Egypt. And all of that's got to be worked out. So he's just building. He's just building, building. And so all good things come to an end. He dies. And then we get Thutmose I. Now, this is another army buddy. He gets to take it. This is not the son of the previous pharaoh. This is just another army buddy. And he takes over as pharaoh. But things are stable by now. Things are stable. The kingdom's back together. The army's back together. The wealth is flowing. Everything's great. And I think one morning, it's always 3 a.m., he's lying on his bed. And Thutmose I has a dream, or he has a thought, you know, everything's good. I think I want an empire. We got to go conquer some people. You know, we have the Super Bowl today and things like that. In the ancient world, it was warfare. And the Bible says, and we know this from antiquity, that the time of going to war in antiquity is when? The spring. Spring is the time of going to war. Why? You get all your planting in, you get all your agriculture, everything's set. Okay, now let's go beat up on people. And so off they go to their Super Bowl for that year. And so this is the way it goes. And so Thutmose I says, I got to go beat up on some people. So where does he go? Well, he really only has one place to go. I mean, they get the Nubians in the south, and they're always kind of cooperative, but that's where all the Egyptian gold comes from, right? Nubians got so much gold down there, they don't know what to do with it, so the Egyptians are taking it. But the only way to go is north. I mean, you can go north and east into the Levant. You can go into Canaan. You can go into Syria. That's about it. So what does he do? He drives his armies all the way to the Euphrates River. And he sets up a big billboard, big stele, a big piece of rock up there. It says, I am Thutmose I, king of the world. This is my now the official northern border of my kingdom. And he claims it. But what did he just do? He just crossed into the territory of the Mitanni kingdom, and there's a flashpoint. Now he has to fight the Mitannis, and there's a few skirmishes that go on, but basically Mitanni just kind of hides over the hill, and as the Egyptians go to town by town, and here's the basic line. Go to a town, Would you like to consider yourself a part of the Egyptian Empire or perhaps die? And of course, what are you going to say? Oh, yeah. We heard about you guys. Yeah, okay. We're good. And so they would just go. So Tutmosis the first thinks he's got it all nailed down. He thinks he's got him an empire. And so he leaves for home. These people love me and I'm going to go home. Well, guess what? As soon as he's over the horizon, they're all watching. Okay, he's gone. Here come the Mitannis back. And the Mitannis say, "You did what?" And they said, "Nah, we're kidding. We really love you. We're still in your court. You know, we're happy." So about by the time Tutmosis the first gets his army back home, the whole northern thing is in his head. I mean, it's more of the kingdom, the empire is more an imagination than it is a reality. So that's the situation with Tutmosis the first. Well, he dies, and now we're going to go father-son. For the rest of the dynasty, father-son. So here's the son, Tutmosis the second. And Tutmosis the second does the same thing. He's trying to send armies up, and he's trying to control the area, but same thing. You know, I mean, unless you stay up there with a big army and really reinforce it, they're just basically making a show and going back home, and the Mitannis are coming back and taking the... they just want the corridor to the sea. They want that Mediterranean trade. By the way, Egypt has contact with the Mediterranean, so they don't ever have a problem with that. So, but here's the problem. Tutmosis II has a little wife. Her name is Hatshepsut. And little Hatshepsut is not interested in being the queen. She's not interested in being what's called the god's wife, right? Pharaoh's god, so you're the god's wife. She wants to be Pharaoh, not queen. She wants to be Pharaoh of Egypt. And so, interestingly enough, Tutmosis II dies a little prematurely. She's probably slipping a little glass in his oatmeal from time to time, you know, to kind of facilitate the process. And he dies. Well, and she's got this all worked out because the crown prince, when her husband dies, is only 5 years old. So if the crown prince is only 5 years old, she has now the excuse that I will be his guardian and I will rule administratively Egypt in his stead. But she's not happy just kind of ruling. She has monuments built, has a big mortuary temple built for herself. She starts a big project. She shows herself on the monuments with the beard and the male clothing, right? I mean, she depicts herself as the king, as Pharaoh, not as a queen. Now, little Tut III is in the nursery having a good time, and he's totally unaware of all of this. Doesn't care. But eventually, by the time he reaches puberty, by the time he hits, say, age 14 or 15 for sure, he does what every crown prince gets to do. You become the commander of the Egyptian northern army of Amun-Ra, the army responsible for subduing the territories in the north. So, by around 15, he becomes known as the conqueror of Canaan and Syria. Right? And how long does Hatshepsut reign? 20 years. Now stop and think. There have been pharaohs who've come to the throne when they're 12 years old and began to rule immediately. So think of Tutmosis III. He, at five, wasn't ready to rule, but Queen, it's not his mother, it's his aunt, Hatshepsut is on the throne in Egypt, ruling Egypt, and he's the commander of the northern army. He's bivouacked with his troops up there somewhere in Canaan in Syria, and at 3 a.m. in his tent, on his cot, he has this thought. I'm sure this is exactly the way it happened. I'm 25 years old. I'm the Pharaoh of Egypt. What am I doing up here? Auntie Hatshepsut's down there ruling Egypt for 20 years, and I'm up here doing what? You know what the next thing we know in the history of Egypt? The next thing we know, now, and nobody knows who did it, but it doesn't take much of a brain to figure it out. The next thing we know, Hatshepsut is dead. All of her images and names on the monuments are being hacked off, just chopped off, the stones being carved off. She's being erased as much as possible from history. And Tutmosis III is on the throne. Now, thankfully for my buddy, and I call him my buddy because he's my favorite Pharaoh of all time. He is the greatest, most powerful, wealthiest Pharaoh in the history of Egypt. Nobody, Ramses the Great, nothing compared to Thutmose the Third. He is the greatest Pharaoh in the history of Egypt. He has more territory, has more land, has more money, has more everything than anybody else. This is the pinnacle of Egypt. And I'm happy for him because he's going to rule for the next 34 years all by himself. Thankfully, he lives old enough to actually enjoy being Pharaoh for a while, because a lot of these guys die fairly young. So here he is now. He's Pharaoh. Everything's great, powerful, and his control over the Asiatic provinces is iron fist. Why? Because he lived up there for a long, long time. He knows the situation, probably knows all the kings by name. So he's got it all in control. But, oh yes, all good things must come to an end. Who we got up there now? Amenhotep II, right guy. Son of Tut III. But Thutmose III, smart guy, he brings Amenhotep onto the throne as co-regent for the last 10 years of his life. Pretty smart, huh? You want to have nice, smooth transition. None of this Hatshepsut stuff. You want to have nice, smooth transition to the next king. And so, and it also allows you as the old guy, right? You can just complain and point stuff out. We used to do it this way. I wouldn't do it that way. And it just let your son rule. And so he's just having a good time. And all good things do come to an end. And guess what? Oh, by the way, it was typical when a pharaoh died. Now think of being a Syrian king or a Canaanite king, and you got your... And so when Egypt is in control, when you're under the thumb of Egypt, what are you doing? You're taking your best commodities, wine and olive oil, and you're giving it to Egypt in tribute. They're not paying for it. So you're not making much money. You're just pumping this stuff into Egypt, and they're getting it for free, and it's not a good situation. So what do you suppose every city-state in Canaan and Syria does when they hear that a pharaoh has died? They rebel. They kill the local Egyptian governor. You know, they just throw off the Egyptian yoke. They did this when Thutmose III died. And Amenhotep II got wind of it. Of course he did. He's reconnoitering the whole place all the time. What does he do? Now, Thutmose III was a man of finesse. Man of finesse. I mean, he just was a terrific ruler. He's fair. But Amenhotep II is a thug. By his own admission, he had a composite bow built so strong that he says, I'm the only one that can pull my bow. Nobody else can pull my bow. And he have his mummy. He's the widest of all the mummies of the 18th dynasty. He's a hulking guy. And he's a tough guy. He's a thug. He takes his army and he goes north. He puts a parallel flotilla coming up the Mediterranean. He's going up there to Syria to find all of these kings. He picks seven of them. That's what he says. Seven Syrian kings who have fomented rebellion against him. He finds them. He captures them. He takes them all to the coast, ties them to the prow of his ship, keeps them alive, fed and watered, all the way down to Thebes, to Luxor, gives them... Puts them in confinement, feeds them well, plumps them up, gives them back on a day of celebration, gives them back their regalia, their royal regalia. And he brings them one by one into the temple at Luxor. And personally, Amenhotep II, by his own hand with his own sickle sword, lops off one at a time, lops the head off of every one of them. This is the king. He didn't hire an executioner. He did it personally. King before me, whop, seven times. Next one, whop, has their bodies cut into little pieces, has little cuneiform tablets in Akkadian so they'd understand it, written and tied to those body parts, and he has these distributed all over the Asiatic territories. The little tablet says, this is what happens. When you mess with Amenhotep II, guess how many rebellions he had for the rest of the 18th dynasty. They remembered that and nobody messed with them. So that pretty much ended all of that. Well, all good things come to an end. And then we have this guy, Thutmose the Fourth. Now remember, up to now, every time the Egyptians poked their army into the northern Levant, they had to butt heads with the Mitannis. And Thutmose the Fourth looked at this situation, and for the first time, we have a diplomatic thought in the mind of an Egyptian king. He thought, wait a minute, this costs us a lot of money to keep this thing going. Why don't we just make a deal with the Mitannis? We'll send them a bunch of gold, and they can send me a princess, and we'll all be happy family, and they can recognize our border at the Euphrates River, and as their brother, partner in the covenant, we'll give them total access to the Mediterranean like they want. Win-win. That's what he did. However, Egypt had been negotiating for about 100 years with both Mitanni and the Hittites. Who would they sign a treaty with? The Hittites wanted that northern Levantine area, but they couldn't get it because of Mitanni. Hittites were hoping they could sign a treaty with the Egyptians, which would lock Mitanni out and give the Hittites access to the Mediterranean trade. What just happened? Thutmose the Fourth sided with Mitanni and cut the Hittites out. Before that ink was dry on that treaty, the Hittites were now the sworn enemy of Egypt. And they were seething, and Supiluliuma, by the king, the great warrior king of the Hittites, remember that name, Supiluliuma, best dog name ever, right? She called him Supi. Supiluliuma was bound and determined someday, to take by force what they've taken from me. And so we have the Mitanni, Egypto-Mitannian alliance. So everything's all huggy-kissy between Mitanni and the Egyptians, and now between the power of Mitanni and the combined power of Egypt, Hittites are high and dry and angry. Well, number one power is Egypt. Number two power is Mitanni. Number three power is the Hittites, and we still have that arrangement going on. And this is the first international alliance Egypt ever made. That's why Redford and others and Reeves, Egyptologists, have called Thutmose the Fourth the greatest pharaoh in the history of Egypt, arguably. Now, he's not as great, powerful, and lengthy a reign as Thutmose the Third, his grandfather, but he's the first one to do a brilliant maneuver to keep from having to fight all the time and spend all the money up in the northern territory. So everything is great. Everything is wonderful, except one thing. All good things come to an end, right? For some reason, Thutmose the Fourth died young. We only have documentation for year 8, nothing higher. So most, like Kenneth Kitchen and others, give him 8 to 10 years. That's all. But we have his mummy. In fact, he's the best identified of all the 18th dynasty mummies. He's young, between 25 and 30 years of age. He's handsome, well-coiffed, beautiful manicure. He's got big rings in his ears. Healthy, no pathogens, no wounds on the body. Young, healthy, good-looking, dead. When you're dead, all those other things really don't matter a whole lot. So there he is, dead. Why is he dead? Well, let's look what happened after that. When he died, his son, Amenhotep III, was only 12 years old. Pop didn't live very long. And I want to show you what happened. As soon as we get into the reign of Amenhotep III, the very next pharaoh, who's number one? Hatti. Mitanni has slipped to number two. Egypt is now third. Wait a minute. What just happened? Amenhotep III withdrew all the troops from Syria and Canaan. He let the Asiatic territories go. The empire evaporated almost overnight. It had become a custom through many generations now for Egypt to control this territory, and all of a sudden, he let it go. And what we say is, he would have controlled it if he could have controlled it, but he couldn't, so he let it go. And why couldn't he? We'll come back to that. Something happened after the death of his father that Amenhotep couldn't control. And by the way, Amenhotep III was 12 years old and didn't want to be Pharaoh, had no idea about being Pharaoh, didn't want to. And who ruled for the first half of his reign? Who really administered Egypt? His mama. Queen Mutamwiya, remember the Mitanni princess that T4 took in that negotiation? That's his mother. His mother, Mutamwiya, who's Indo-European Mitanni, rules Egypt for about half of his reign. And when she dies, his wife, A3's wife, Queen Tia, rules for almost for the rest of his reign. And what he does, he moves his palace across the river, actually to the valley of the king's side of the river, which is really weird. And he builds his palace and he builds a big lake out in front of his palace and he builds a party bark, right? And so he spends most of his reign spending money building monuments to himself because Egypt had lots of money. The Nubian gold never dried up. And so he could do that, but he's partying. So he's having a party out on the lake. By the way, any Star Wars fans? In Star Wars, there's a perfect character that is a dead ringer for Amenhotep III. Jabba the Hutt. Got him? That's Amenhotep III. Just hanging out on his barge, you know, having a party. And so what's happening? Egypt is dying from plagues. It's being disrupted. They've lost their northern empire completely. And he's just trying to stiff upper lip. Build lots of stuff. Oh, yeah, we're fine. Oh, we're good. Yeah, but it wasn't good. It wasn't good. Egypt is collapsing around his ears, and he knows it. 38 years, he rules for a long time, 38 years. But during that 38 years, here's what happened. Watch this. During the reign of Amenhotep III, remember Mitanni and Egypt were linked, controlling the whole area? During the reign of Amenhotep III, Supiluliuma, remember him? Supiluliuma took his Hittite army, crossed the Euphrates River, and crushed and burned Washukani, the Mitanni capital, to the ground. Whoa. And he did it with impunity, without any fear of Egyptian reprisal whatsoever. He now was going to take by force what he had been refused by having a treaty with Egypt, and he was angry, and he destroys the Mitanni capital, and Mitanni is reduced to a vestige of its former self. And by the way, 20 years from right now, from this, Supi's going to return, and he's going to wipe it out, all of it, going to run it into the ground. Now, what do the Hittites have? Now the Hittites have what they always wanted. They've got control of the northern Levantine coast, and they have entered the Mediterranean economic world. And they are happy, happy people. Now, Supiluliuma is not interested in the southern half of the Levant. He couldn't care less about Canaan. Let the Egyptians have it if they want it. I don't care. I want what I want, and that's the Mediterranean access coastal areas. So he's got it now. With Mitanni now taken down, Assyria now is right. Remember, they were a vassal state. Now Assyria is rising, and they are quickly going to become the old Assyrian Empire. And of course, they're going to wind up butting heads with Mitanni, but that's off our story. And so this is the situation. Now look at this. This is still in the reign of Amenhotep III. Hatti is number one. Assyria is number two. Egypt might be number three. And Mitanni's hanging on by a fingernail. And they're about to be wiped out completely. So here we are. Now we're in the time of Akhenaten. If Thutmose IV is Pharaoh of the Exodus, Joshua's conquest of Canaan would start in the second year of Akhenaten, 40 years later. And as we'll see, the Amarna texts, which talk about the Habiru disrupting cities and towns in Canaan, exactly what Joshua was doing, are written during that period of time. So it's amazing there.
Time today has come to a close. Be sure to join us again here on Evidence and Answers. Our goal is to bring you the love of Christ and to equip you in your faith to always be ready to give a response. If you would like to hold an apologetics conference or series of teachings at your facility, contact Pat by calling him in Hawaii. That number there is 483-0586. Or email him through the Evidence and Answers website. That's evidenceandanswers.org. Be sure to browse through our listing of topics on our site. We have everything from atheism to Zen Buddhism. You will also find articles and additional audio for you to listen to or download. An additional location to find Pat's messages is on YouTube. Look up Evidence and Answers and hit that subscribe button. To keep quality broadcasts like Pat's on the air, we rely on generous financial support from you, our listeners. Donating is simple. Once again, log on at evidenceandanswers.org. Evidence and Answers is grateful for one of our sponsors, the Honolulu Christian Church. If you don't have a home church and are looking for a great place to grow in your faith, check out the Honolulu Christian Church. For service times, log in at honoluluchristian.org. Join us again next time on the air or online as we provide compelling reasons for faith in Christ. That's Evidence and Answers with Pat Zukeran.